those properties are averaging $250,000 positive cash flow per year. Positive, you know? So that's 20 grand a month. In many circles, that one property is enough to retire. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back. Whiskey Wednesday.
Yes, Mr. sir.
Jake Sheehy.
Yes, sir. Great day to be alive.
Great man. Day to be alive. Yes, sir. Coming off the hills. Super Bowl 60. Yeah. Another redhead wins. He held it up. Old Jake was excited.
Yeah. Let's go Seahawks, baby. Let's go.
Pulled Sam Darnold. Pulled through with the Seahawks. Yeah. Kind of a boring game.
Yeah. I felt bad for
Drake May,
whatever his name was, dude. He was Drake getting May. Pummeled, man. Poor guy.
He was getting hammered. I'm a Bronco fan, so I was kind of like, oh, man. And all the Bronco games were kind of like that all year. They were kind of boring until the fourth quarter, and then they were kind of exciting in the fourth quarter. But this was kind of one of those it was kind of a defensive battle. It wasn't super exciting. Maybe it's just because my team wasn't in. I don't know. I wasn't into this one.
I'm totally with you. I totally felt the same. I even looked at Nicole at one point, and I go, did the Patriots pay to get here, dude? How are these people here right
they
now?
They look pretty bad. Now Seattle's defense is the best in the league. So they have a tendency to make a lot of people look bad. And congrats to the Seattle fans. When my Broncos were out, I kind of lost interest. So I was like, gosh, dang it. I was hoping for a little bit better game.
Yeah, me too. And I was hoping for a better halftime show as well. But, you know, we don't got to get into that. You know, we don't got to say.
Yeah, you know, I heard – I didn't watch it. I heard that he was I don't speak Spanish, and so I was looking – I was more – I heard that Bad Bunny was quite the performer.
I mean, I got to give him credit. I believe he's 2025 most – like streamed artist in the whole world on Spotify, so he's got an audience.
Worldwide audience, he's
amazing. Sure. But
I heard he's it's a good performance. I'm a country guy. I like country music. Mm-hmm. Just give me something I can understand and listen to and tell a story in. And so I'm not I'm not a best judgment of that halftime show. Yeah. So most of them I'm just that's when I go get dinner and
go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump into this, man. We got a really good one today. Okay, we're gonna have a little debate here. Once again, want the audience to know, I love short term rentals, but I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Okay.
I'm happy to be here, and I'm not trying to be that way. But we should go over some of these objections that some people may have.
Let's have a little debate on short term rentals as an asset class.
100%. That's what we're doing today. So we're gonna talk about housing costs, housing rates, the risk, the saturation, time, effort, all the costs, margin, just a bunch of stuff that we hear a lot of times on, man, STRs are dead, or it's an old asset, it's too much, and we're going to kind of go back and forth on some of these things, okay?
Okay.
We got 10 objections. Let's go with the first one. I'm going to go with the objection that, okay, here we go.
You got to make your argument.
I know, dude.
We're
going to
debate.
Let's I know. Hear your okay, here we go.
I'm going to try to make my best argument.
Housing costs, the prices are too high. If I want to go into this asset class to buy a house, it costs too much money. Right. That's my stance.
Okay.
Now, when we go about this, should I just say my stance and then let you rebuttal?
It's your stance.
Okay, that's my stance. It costs too much, that the market is already too inflated, and it costs too much to buy a second home.
Yeah. I mean, house prices are high. Mm-hmm. They have been high. There's three challenges that us as investors have dealt with, whether it's short-term rentals, long-term rentals, anything else, in the last few years. And it's been high prices, high interest rates, and low inventory. Mm-hmm. And so some of those things are stabilizing a little bit. We are seeing housing prices stabilize, but I don't think they're coming down. I've been saying it for years because of the inventory levels. You know, real estate is a fairly easy to predict and a very stable asset, and it reflects supply demand inventory levels versus demand, right? And we have a gap of inventory levels, so prices are high, right? So I'll give you the fact that prices are high. So what are you gonna do about it? We're gonna just say, hey, listen, we're not gonna do anything. We're gonna sit our hands. We're not able to do something about it. I'm not gonna be able to invest, because there are people who are gonna invest. Now, the price of your asset has to do, and that is absolutely something to consider on the returns you're going to get, right? There's an acquisition cost versus the revenue any sort of property can generate. And that has to be favorable to be investable for you as an investor. Mm-hmm. And so does it make it to where some markets are not as investable as others? Absolutely. Mm. And so it's, but it's, again, debt service is just one of those line items on your portfolio, on your pro forma that says, hey, listen, can the revenue the property is generating support the debt service along with the fixed expenses, along with the variable expenses, to where I can actually have positive cash flow? And there are a lot of the things that we love about short-term rentals. There's a lot of ways to be able to go buy quality assets that are high-priced and still pay the debt service, pay the fixed expenses, pay the variable expenses, and have some money left over for some profit. And so, you know, I would argue that short-term rentals are in many cases allowing us to go buy those quality assets that are priced at high prices. Now, high-priced areas and high-priced properties are an indication of appreciation as well. And so when you buy quality assets in quality areas, they tend to appreciate a little bit higher, which makes the prices higher. Long-term, they're higher to acquire, and they're higher long-term, though, so you can build some wealth in some of those areas. And as long as you are able to cover the debt service that comes with a higher-priced asset and still make profit, if somebody else is paying for it for you, why would you say, I don't want to do it? Now,
man, this is gonna be tough to try and do. So much more educated in this area, so this is gonna be a tough one. But I'm gonna try my best here, dude.
Hey, listen, there's some pros and cons to everything. Yeah. So there's plenty of these that you're gonna probably walk away with a W on.
I may have to give up the first couple. Then I'm gonna have to go with it, because that does make complete sense to my opinion. And plus, I feel like our target audience, that's not really one of their biggest worries. But I feel like I do hear that with some people that the housing cost is too much, and well, at the same time, it's gonna appreciate. So I'll give you that.
And somebody else is paying for it, right?
Right.
So at the end of the day, we're looking at all of these things as variables in our decision-making of saying, does this make sense or does it not make sense?
Right.
High cost are one of the major variables in investing into anything. And it's been the major three variables that have been a challenge for investors pretty much across the board. I'm saying all-inclusive in real estate has been high prices, high interest rates, low inventory.
Okay, now this is actually a question. I don't know if this is a debate point. Would you say that it's not just for short-term rentals that prices are too high, but what about like multifamily homes or even bigger properties? It's across the board going up, right? Would you say that, or is it just mainly for this asset class that's more expensive?
No, it's pretty much across the board. I mean, you looked at what like multifamily properties were trading at very low cap rates. That means they were getting a very high price, right, for the revenue that was being generated. The lower the cap rate, the higher the price the asset's going to sell for. So you were seeing some of these institutional investors picking up multifamily properties at 3 and 4 caps. And so that means high prices. That means you're paying high values for these properties.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's pretty much across the board when you look at a lot of it. Now, there's been some hiccups a little bit on the commercial side, because a lot of commercial loans are adjustable rate loans. And so what happens is all of a sudden that debt service was adjusting the whole time. And so a lot of these commercial deals are not performing the way that they were supposed to. And some of the multifamily deals, same thing. And they've got these adjustable rate mortgages. Maybe the rents haven't kept up with it. And so some of them are saying, hey, listen, we need to trade it a little bit better, you know, better value for the investor, higher cap rates for the investor, lower prices, some of those things. So we're seeing some downward pressure on pricing. But a lot of what we're finding, especially in the single family game, because we compete with retail investors and we compete with retail buyers that are going to live in these homes in many of these areas, that the prices just still remain really, really high, even though there's been all this downward pressure on the housing market itself. Across the board, it's still like a 1-2% appreciation pretty much across the board the last few years. It's been a very kind of stagnant, stable market.
Okay. All right, across the board. Here we go. Number two, housing rates. Man, these housing rates are way too high. Why would I buy into this when just like 10, 15 years ago, it was so much cheaper? Why would I go into this and like now have to pay much more for a property and much more on my rate? Why would I do that?
Well, you could wait. You could wait, right? And so real estate cyclical, right? And so are rates. But if you look historically over a 40-year run. Rates are jumping around all the time. I mean, they're going up, they're going down, they're bouncing around. Historically, we're not in that high of rates, really. I mean, it feels like we're in a really high rate environment. We feel like it should be coming down. I'm an advocate for those rates to come down. Mm-hmm. When the average consumer has better buying power and funds are easier to borrow, to go buy assets and to go start businesses, all those different things that the rates affect. Mm-hmm. I think it's better for the economy. Personally, we don't have to get into that. But if the argument is, I'm looking at an asset mm-hmm. and, you know, I was looking back, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, I could have picked up an asset for, you know, I guess now you got to go, it was kind of mid 2022 when they jumped up. And so we got to go back 5 years, let's say. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm still looking back 5 years and say, man, I wish I would have had those rates and I'm waiting for those to come back. The drawback of those coming back goes back to your first argument that rates or that prices are too high. Mm-hmm. If rates drop to those historic low levels, mm-hmm. you know, you're getting 3% and 4% mortgages, all of a sudden prices skyrocket again. And so there is something that there's a inverse relationship between pricing and rates, right? And mm-hmm. and so especially on the retail sector side, where you say, hey, listen, if rates are coming down to 3%, all of a sudden a lot more people can afford to buy houses. People don't buy the price of the house. They buy the mortgage payment, the monthly payment. Mm. And so they're going to say, hey, listen, that made that house more affordable. So I'm going to go spend more money on this house. All of a sudden, now those houses go up in price. And so you're going to start to skyrocket prices again if they get too low. Mm. And so I think that there's a balance and there's a happy medium. But let's go back just to the argument of the rates are too high for me right. to invest. Right. Again, it's just a line item on your balance sheet and on the pro forma to say, does this work or not? Mm. Doesn't really matter whether the rates are 12% or 3%. If somebody else is paying for it and you're able to, you know, have enough revenue to cover all that debt service mm-hmm. at a high rate, mm-hmm. cover all your fixed expenses, mm-hmm. cover all your variable expenses, mm-hmm. and then ultimately make money, doesn't matter. Does it really matter if you're able to generate enough revenue, whatever asset class you're buying, short-term rentals, what we're talking about, to cover that debt service at a high rate? Do you care, right? Why fixate on something? If I could say, hey, listen, here, Jake, here's a property. It's, you know, X amount for a purchase, all-time highs in this market. It's X amount for an interest rate, pretty high in this market. Mm-hmm. But also, by the way, the short-term rental side, the revenue you can generate is hitting historic levels as well. And so if I say, hey, all of this combined, high price for a house, high price for an interest rate, here's all your variable expenses, here's all your fixed expenses, and you're making X amount per month on this property by buying it. Mm. Let's say you're making $2,000 a month, right? Mm-hmm. You're adding an extra $24,000 a year to your income, but it's a really high price, really high interest rate. Or you can say, I don't want that because I'm paying too high of an interest rate there. I want to wait for a 3% interest rate, or I want to give myself a raise of $24,000 a year in cash flow, plus all the tax advantages, the note pay down, the appreciation that comes along with owning real estate.
Mm, that's a good argument. That's a good one. I would take it.
So, right, you don't want to focus on one aspect of the deal. Mm. I want to focus on the whole deal.
Mm. Okay. All right. Another W. Okay. 2-0. Or let's keep it up. Risk versus upside. Okay. My argument here is, okay, other asset classes, they're cheaper, they're easier to understand, and they're less risky. Okay, so I'm gonna play the side of crypto right now, because I would say that's harder to understand. A lot of people don't even know what it is.
Okay.
But it's way easier to get into and cheaper, meaning I can right now download Coinbase or Robinhood, or I can download an app, Thinkorswim or whatever it is, on my device and start buying crypto right now. I can put as much money as I want into it. I can put $100, $100,000, whatever I want, and I can just let it ride. And so it's easier for me. It's cheaper. That's my argument. The risk versus the upside.
Okay, so where in that argument are you talking about risk? Less risky? Because ease of entry doesn't equal less risky. Well, ease of entry, like the veil of entry, mm-hmm. I would agree. Easier, right?
Right.
I can take whatever amount, then I can go buy a stock, a crypto, anything that's traded mm-hmm. electronically, ease mm-hmm. of entry.
Right.
Where are we talking about risk versus reward?
My risk is virtually zero. Meaning if I bought Bitcoin like 4 years ago, right? It was going up and
I'd be in a really good spot.
Hold on. If I bought Bitcoin like 4 years ago, it went up, right? And I'd say I didn't sell it, and now it's back down. It like plummeted. Right? But I didn't lose any money. It's still just in there. it's still, and I'll just wait another 4 years and then it'll do fine.
Okay.
But if I bought the real estate and say something crashed or some people don't book my property, and now I still got to pay for that. I still got to come up with the monthly payments. So now there's like risk to like to pay for something. Whereas that I can just throw it in, just leave it. And if it crashes, it crashes. I'll wait. If it goes up, I'll pull out or I'll do whatever I want.
So you're saying there's no holding costs to it as far as your, sure. Like, right.
Yeah.
Cause there's still risk. You put $100,000 in, yeah. It goes down to 50. You're not calculating that as a loss or a risk.
No, because I'll just wait and it'll just go back up.
Okay. Well, wait with real estate. Same thing happens. Tangible asset is going to, you know, any sort of asset long-term is going up.
I agree.
So ease of entry, no holding cost.
Right.
I can just park it if it's money I don't need, and I can just I'm playing the long game.
Yes. Great.
Absolutely would agree. It's easier.
Okay.
Risky. I'm not quite buying off on that one because I think that those. I mean, Trump sneezes and the stock market changes. Right. I mean, it's like the volatility.
Sneezes.
Because of the ease of entry and the ease of getting in and the ease of getting out, those markets are really volatile. Mm-hmm. So the risk is there, right? So they can be very risky, in my opinion. Real estate is fairly stable. It's not as easy to buy and sell because the ease of entry is a little bit harder and the ease of exit is harder. It's going to stay a lot more stable. So you're not going to see these massive upside swings and these massive downside swings. You're going to see a more stable asset class when it comes to that. Now, if there's leverage on the property, you can leverage your property and you have debt service on it. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, okay, because I have a payment on that now, I'm all of a sudden now I feel like it's more risky because if I'm not making, you know, I don't have rentals coming in, I don't have as a short-term rental, as a long-term rental, whatever, right? If I'm not making money on the backside, I've got this debt service that I have to pay for. Mm-hmm. Now, I agree with that. Because it's one of the powers of real estate is you can buy it with leverage and you have a tangible asset and you get paid on that leverage as well. I can control and buy $500,000 property with $100,000 down. You're able to leverage crypto and stock as well. So if you're going to talk apples to apples and I go leverage a 50% leverage on my crypto account or my stock account and that sucker goes down, I have to come up with some money, right? I have to say, hey, listen, I got to make this whole. They're not going to let you ride out a negative balance for a very long time, right? And so you drop more than a certain amount, all of a sudden you got a negative rolling balance and you're like, oh crap, I'm in trouble. Same sort of situation. If things are going bad, you can't just ride it out forever if you leveraged any of that portfolio, correct?
Okay.
Am I correct on that? I'm pretty sure I am.
I believe
you're
right.
I'm not an investor in crypto and stocks. So everybody that is listening that is an expert in that, I'm pretty sure you can leverage that stuff as well.
I've heard that before.
And you also can't sit on a negative balance for very long. You're gonna have to make it whole if things tank on you, right? And so it can be very volatile where you're still having to come up with something at the end. And so ease of it, like I would look at something as less risky when it's more stable. And I look at real estate as a tangible asset that is more stable. It is harder to get into for sure, but that's what makes it more stable. It's harder to exit for sure. I can't just if Trump makes a comment that I don't like, I'm not just selling my house tomorrow. Stocks, that happens all the time. Crypto happens all the time, right? And so things tank overnight because of a news article somewhere or something that happens and all of a sudden it really affects the markets. It's kind of crazy. I'm doing tariffs. The market likes it or doesn't like it. I'm taking them off. The market likes it or doesn't like it. And so there's all these different things that are affecting these markets because of the ease of entry. I feel like that volatility in my head makes it more risky. The stability of real estate, especially though, there's way more underwriting that goes into it. There's way more due diligence that goes into it because you're right. If I buy an asset that has no business making the money that I thought it was going to make, we see this all the time in short-term rentals. I mean, it's one of the biggest drawbacks. And I would agree with you that there are people that are buying these assets that have no clue what the back end revenue is. If you're buying a long-term rental, it's fairly easy to underwrite. It's fairly easy to figure out what you're going to rent that property for. Short-term rentals are completely different. And so we do see this, and I do see it as a risk, especially for investors that are coming in that don't understand that back end revenue piece, because you're right. They could be buying an asset, quality area that is not going to make the money they predicted. And so all of a sudden, They've got this asset, hard to sell, hard to get in and out of, costs money to sell, and all of a sudden they're paying for it every single month because they didn't underwrite the back end revenue correctly. So there is some responsibility on making sure that you're buying quality assets, quality areas, but also has the revenue potential to be positive cash flow for you, right?
All right.
And you have to be fairly conservative with that. You can't be shooting for the moon. So that might be a tie. I'll give you
that. Well, no, this
I don't know if that's a clear win or a clear loss for either of us, because I think there's some good valid points on both sides.
Well, this is my next point that I feel like goes into it. So you told me about the volatility of crypto and stuff.
Yeah.
The tariffs or Trump sneezes. This is what I would say. Well, your volatility is that there's too many people in this asset class. It's too saturated. There's too many people that they can. You got to be watching this episode, in my opinion, that there's too many people. It's saturated. That I may buy this stable asset, but they still may not choose me.
Right.
And that's why yours is volatile.
Okay. Again. When I'm looking at the back end revenue piece, there are things that I have to do and levers that I can pull to maximize an asset and be able to get the revenue that I thought I was going to get. Saturation, if everybody listening could just say saturation equals demand. So everybody looks at saturation as this bad word in this game that we're playing. You look at it as volatile and you know, as a detriment to my success.
Yep.
Absolutely, I look at it the opposite. Saturation is demand. I know how to go play a game, and I want to play in a game where the consumer's spending a lot of money, and they spend the most money in the most saturated markets, period. Go look at it. Go look it up. Look up the data. I'm not making this shit up, right? Just go look it up. And so if you can get in your head in short-term rentals, saturation equals demand. Demand is where the consumers are spending money. It's your job to figure out why and how and what they're looking for to spend their money on. And you have to become that. And if you don't know, then yes, you're exactly right. The middle is messy. There's the, we call it the mess. Like I say, the middle is where everybody goes to die in this game. You know, you're going to go, and there's a lot of really good properties in really good markets that are operating in the middle. It's not because of the bad property or a bad market. It's not because of saturation. The consumer's in there spending money, but it's because you're just becoming a commodity and you don't understand how to play the game. Go learn how to play the game. The drawback of short-term rentals is you're exactly right. There's a lot of pros and cons to this asset class, just like everything else, by the way. Nothing is immune to this. So any of the talking heads, myself included, that you hear say, this is the end all be all for something, or that is the end all be all, or this is dead, or that is dead, they are doing it for clicks at the you know, for whatever reason, or they're just plain ignorant. They don't know what they're talking about, because every single one of these asset classes has pros and cons. And to say one is dead, especially a mainstream asset class, when we're talking about real estate, it's not true, right? I hear talking heads all the time say, oh, I'd rather do this, or I'd rather do that. There's so many it depends, and there's so many ways to play every single one of these games. However, what you will find consistent across every single one of these asset classes, the people that know how to play the game correctly and play it at the top will dominate. Short-term rentals are no different. So saturation is not necessarily a volatility factor, in my opinion. I think it's a demand factor. Where people struggle is that they don't know how to go get their unfair share of business. And so until you understand how to get your unfair share of business, it's not that complicated. It's not like it's rocket science. We're not playing a game that is like, okay, you have to be, you know, PhD from MIT to be able to play this game. It's not. It's understanding consumer behavior, what people are willing to pay for, what they're not willing to pay for, and then just go do it, right? And the issue is a lot of people are not willing to do it. They're not willing to roll up their sleeves and figure that out. And so it's easier to say, you know who's really attracted to the comment of saying, I don't like short-term rentals anymore. Short-term rentals are dead. I'd rather do mid-term rentals, or I'd rather look at RV parks, or I'd rather look at this. You know, every single one of those games, you have to operate at the top as well to make the high prices, the high interest rates, all of those things work. And so it's easier to say that, though, because guess where most people are operating in every single market?
Middle.
Right in the middle. Yep. You know how frustrating and messy the middle is. And so guess who's operating at the top? Maybe 10 to 15% of the market. And so the top people are going to hear that and say, let them talk. Let them click on that. I'm happy where I'm at. I'd rather have less people figuring this game out. And which is not true, by the way. I don't think that. I think that the more people that figure it out, the bar continues to raise and we can all make more money. However, there's a lot of people that just think, hey, listen, let them appeal to the middle, and then they bounce around, right? The grass is always greener somewhere else. And one of the easiest ways for you to get somebody unattracted to short-term rentals is somebody that's already in the game and realizes how messy that middle is, and then they think, oh man, midterm rentals seem better. Long-term rentals seem better. Multifamily seems better. Commercial seems better. They all have pros and cons. I love them all. Like, you can make money in every single one of them. But you're going to still have to figure out how to play the game at a high level to make money in any of them. You don't think those are all competitive spaces? Absolutely they are, right?
Man, sure. But you got to remember, I'm disagreeing with you. So no,
they're not. But I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people, and it's a great conversation, because there's not an end all be all asset class. There's not an end all be all market. And you know, however many people want to tell you they found the most up and coming market. If it's up and coming today, tomorrow it's going to be mainstream. It's going to be saturated, and you're going to still have to figure out the game to operate at the top.
All right, into the next, man. We got to keep this thing moving here. Time. This takes too long for a return. You start your property, you launch it, you got to wait 12 to 18 months to really optimize, to really maximize, to really get all of that money made. That takes way too long for those kinds of returns. I'm looking for something that I can get within 6 months. It takes too long.
Okay, so what are you comparing it against?
I'm comparing it against, well, I'm going to go with stocks. Okay. I'm going to go with stocks. I'm going to swing trade stocks maybe 5 days. I'm going to wait 5 days. I know Tesla's going to have their new market announcement, new annual announcement. They've been making money. I'll buy it and wait 5 days, 7 days. It'll go up and I'll get some return. That's what I'm comparing it against.
And then you put it back in, or you just
I put it back in. I pull it. I sell it. I make some money. So, well, not day trade. I'm swing trading. This is every couple of days I'll do it.
Okay, swing trading. New. I don't know the term swing trading.
Day trade, swing trade, long term trade.
Okay, so we're a swing trader. So you're saying, hey, listen, I'm gonna. So you.
I want my return in a couple of days.
Okay.
A week or less.
Okay, so on a cash flow side of life.
Yes, that's what I want.
Okay, well, yeah, but you might not, short-term rentals might not be the right asset class for you. So
yes, dude, I got one.
So
I got
here, one, though, here's where your returns come from. Okay. And this is why I ask, what are you judging it against? Okay. Right? Okay, I'm going to be a swing trader. I'm going to take 100K. I'm going to go trade every few days, and I'm going to make some money. Are you going to keep that 100K in there, and you're just going to pull the money out so you're not really growing the 100K, or are you leaving it in there and just continue to parlay it and double down?
I'm going to keep parlaying and double down.
So you're not making...
Well, I mean, if the stock goes from 100 to 150, then I made $50. I'm going to keep it in there. Or, heck, why not? I'll pull it out. So now I have 150, right? So now
or 50. Made your 50.
I'm sorry. Right? I made my 50.
Yeah. Pull out your profits. You're always operating. So, okay. With real estate, but let's stick with short-term rentals.
Okay.
So I'm going to buy it. You said 12 to 18 months to really maximize it.
Oh.
Right? Yeah. Makes you want to throw up. I get it. Right? So really, real estate should be compared, first of all, against other long-term investments. It's a long-term investment, right?
Okay.
With some very good short-term benefits. So your first year benefit, a massive benefit for a lot of people, is the tax advantages. Mm-hmm. You literally can reduce your taxable income to zero. I mean, in a lot of cases, you've got this massive tax write-off, and it supplements your, and you, that is money you actually keep in your pocket that you're not paying the IRS. So that's a massive instant return that first year. So first year return, you also are going to have cash flow. Like we don't plan on not having cash flow. However, I always tell people, you got 3 to 6 months where you might not have any cash flow, where you are having to budget and pay for that. So it's a budgeting. It's saying, hey, listen, I've got to make sure that I can get the down payment. I can get my furnishing and setup costs. I can get my holding costs before I launch, before I really start making money. It's a long-term investment. Sure. Should you compare that against other long-term investments? I would prefer that, so you can make a good decision. I wouldn't compare day trading or swing trading to a long-term investment, because there's long-term stock trading as well, right? And you're going to put that money in, you're going to set it in there, and you're going to let it ride, right?
Right.
That's more what real estate is, with the benefit of cash flow, right? Mm-hmm. So you do have that cash flow that does provide some monthly income after a certain period of time, and it doesn't start right out of the gate. In most cases, it's going to take a little bit to start to stabilize. But you're going to be making money in your first 3 to 6 months. And hopefully you're making enough money to start covering the cost of the asset, to start covering the holding cost. You're just not maximizing. You're not hitting your full stride for 12 to 18 months. But ultimately, you've got a lot of other levers that are, you know, that first year, somebody else is still paying the majority of those mortgage payments. As soon as you start renting it out, you're getting all of those tax advantages. You're getting some cash flow and you're getting that appreciation as well by owning the asset. So you're getting, and the fifth one in short-term rentals, you got personal use, right? The whole time you own this, during those slow times when it's getting set up or whatever, go enjoy the property with your friends, family, whatever, right? You got that personal use aspect. So it's, the first question I ask you is, what are you comparing it against? If you're really comparing it against another long-term investment, then I wouldn't say that it takes too long to get a return. I would argue that you have multiple ways to get a return. Some of them are pretty quick. Some of them are longer, right? And so you've got to balance in short-term rentals with the multiple ways that you get a return on it. And, you know, is it going to be, you know, you're not going to go invest in a stock, sell it tomorrow or the next day or next week and get some profits from it. That's not how this asset works. But you also don't have a lot of the other advantages in that type of investment as well. Short-term, there's short-term investing, medium-term investing, and long-term investing. Real estate is a long-term investment. And so you need to compare it to other long-term investments. As far as short-term rentals, anything that's a rental. Real estate has short-term and medium-term money as well. Development deals, fix and flip deals, wholesale deals, very short term, right? I'm putting it under a contract, I'm selling it to somebody else, boom, I got some money. It's like day trading the real estate, right? Wholesaling deals. If I buy a property and I'm going to fix it up, add value, sell it 3 to 6 months, medium term money. Development deals, medium term money. Long term deals are going to be your multifamily, your short term rentals, your long term rentals, your commercial deals that you're investing in for that cash flow along the way. So you have to judge each type of an investment, whether it's short, medium, or long term, with other short, medium, or long term assets.
Man, okay, that's real. I like how you did that. Let's compare it like this. So this goes into my next point. Effort takes too much effort, and I'm a busy high income earner. So say I'm gonna do the long. I'm gonna put money into stocks. I'm gonna buy Microsoft, Disney, Apple, Tesla. I'm gonna buy these stocks, and I'm gonna leave them in there 10, 20 years. So now we're gonna compare long term here. But now my argument is, this is so much easier for me. I don't have to learn this asset class. I can learn a little bit about these big companies and just pick and choose them, but I don't got to learn about design or underwriting or photography, marketing, property. I don't got to do any of that. This is so much easier for me.
Yeah, it is. It's way easier, right? The benefit or the drawback is most people are looking and saying, did that strategy work for you? A lot of our clients, they're high income earners. They're all of a sudden they're in their mid 40s, 50s, and they start to look and say, hey, that's the strategy I've done with my 401k forever. That's the strategy that I was taught. That's the traditional strategy. It's just park it in the markets and see what's going to happen long term. And so a lot of people, and I can't speak personally to this because I don't invest in stocks. I don't think it's a bad investment. I'm not saying it's a bad investment. I'm saying a lot of people are looking at it saying, man, I've been doing this for 25 years and I'm looking at my 401k and I'm 10 years from retirement and this isn't going to cut it. And that is the model they followed. That is what they've been doing, right? Maybe not aggressively enough. Maybe they're in a position, but a lot of people are staring down the barrel of retirement and thinking, hey, that traditional model really isn't paying me off. Now, I would argue when you lay out that model with the model that we're talking about, there should be a better return. There should be more reward because I am putting more time and effort into it. So if I'm going to be, if returns are fairly equal, I mean, you could make the argument of diversifying, you know, different asset classes and saying, well, I don't want all my eggs in the stock market. I don't want all my eggs in real estate, whatever. I want to diversify. The effort is way more on the real estate side. It's so much easier just to put money in the stock market, just to put it in the S&P or just put it into, you know, into a brokerage account and let it sit. However, you know, when I look at it, I see all those other levers. When I look at all those other levers that I'm able to do and the leverage behind it, I feel like my return and my acceleration toward my goal is much better on the real estate side. Easier. No, I would argue it's not easier. So this real estate, particularly, but short-term rentals are very front-end loaded on time and effort money. All of those things are very front-end loaded. I got to learn a new asset class. I got to put a lot of money into it to invest in it and acquire these properties and set them up. And, you know, my effort, depending on, even if you're like in my case, we teach people not to manage their own properties, mm-hmm. to hire full service property managers, set it up to work and operate without you. You don't want to create a second job for yourself. We have a lot of members who are amazing property managers, mm-hmm. but they want to do that. I suggest that most people that are not looking for a second job don't become a property manager. But even in those instances, you're still spending time on the acquisition and you're still spending time during that setup phase and making the decisions there to get that property furnished and designed and mm-hmm. everything else. And so it is very front-end loaded when it comes to the time. Now, I would expect a better return on the back end because of that time and effort and money that I had to put in on the front end. It's the drawback of short-term rentals. When I say pros and cons to this game, one of the biggest cons to this game is the time, effort, and money it takes on the front end of these deals. They are capital intensive, right? You are going to have a few hours a week to dedicate to this until that property is set up. And if you don't have that, you know, and you look in the mirror and say, it's just not worth the trade-off when I write it down on paper. Fair enough. I mean, I'm not here to say you should or shouldn't. I mean, pick your priorities, pick what you're trying to do, what your property goals are. And if this asset class helps you accelerate better than something else, then great. I think it gives a lot of advantages to a lot of people from all four of those major levers.
All right, we're moving on, man. All costs. So this is another thing that I really disagree with, Sean, and I'm upset about. Okay, so say I want to join a group, right? Say I want to join Vodacy. I gotta join Vodacy, but now I also have the cost of the property, the cost to design, the cost to do photography, the cost of the property manager, the cost of the insurance, and all of these other bills and things. So there's so many extra things. I'm not just paying for just a short-term rental. I'm paying for all these extra things, and I'm not okay with that.
Okay.
That's one of my main objections.
Why though? Because you don't feel like you're going to get a return, or because you don't have the money?
No, because that's a fantastic question, and I'm upset about it because I feel like it's hidden. I feel like I was going to join in, and then these things, I was just going to be able to design it, and it was just going to be handed to me kind of thing, or since I'm already learning about design that I'd be able to figure out, but now these are like extra costs I got to pay for.
Yeah.
That's why I'm upset.
So, one, hopefully it's not hidden. If you listen to the podcast, we talk about this shit all the time. So, listen to the podcast, Jake.
Please, please listen and share the podcast.
Please listen, because this should not be hidden. You should be walking this with your eyes wide open. This is, you're right. There are costs to operate at a high level in this game. And those are all factors of what am I paying for? You mentioned the cost to acquire, right? Mm-hmm. That's a cost that most people plan on. I'm going to acquire the property, right? But then you mentioned design, and then you mentioned furnishing it, or design and furnishings, where property management, all of the photography, all that stuff, right? And so design and photography, design is really creating a unique experience, right? Mm-hmm. I bought the property. I got to bring it to life. So that's a cost associated with doing business. That's a cost of business, right? The photography, I've got to market this property. I got to articulate this. That's another cost that's going to give me an advantage in the marketplace to get my unfair share of business. These are things that, these two things are costs that I'm spending to give myself an advantage, so that when we talk about getting out of the messy middle and being able to say, hey, listen, I want to be in the top of the market, these are costs that are going to give us an instant return on that. Right? So that we can get our unfair share of business. Property management, cost of doing business, of saying, hey, listen, do I want to do this? And most people, when you look in the mirror and say, hey, listen, how much do I make in my regular job? Am I better off just focusing my effort on my active income and letting somebody else do what they do well? And when I underwrite the deals, I put that cost in there as a variable expense on doing business in this market, so that I don't have to have a second job and I don't create a second job. You're right. There's all these things that stack up. We have CPAs that are going to, you know, I'm essentially going to be writing off the property we talk about all the time. That's a very public case study. So I'll just refer back to it. That Cherry Log property. I had a $245,000 write-off that reduced my taxes by $95,000. I don't know how to do that. So I'm going to have a cost of a CPA that really does know how to do that and can make sure the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted. That CPA might cost me, you know, $5,000 to $7,000. Who knows, right? It's not an H&R block for $300, right? You're not going to go there Shout out, sorry, to H&R Block. It's my point is, it's not, you have costs involved in doing business, but is my return on that cost worth it, right? Mm. If I can spend $6,000 or $7,000 or $10,000 and be able to have a reduction of my taxes of $95,000 that I didn't know how to do, and I want to make sure it's done right, that's a pretty good return on that investment, right? Mm, it's a 10-to-1 return on investment, right? If I'm going to spend $5,000 to $10,000 on a photo shoot, but it puts me in a position to make an extra $35,000 or $40,000 on my property because it gives me that extra exposure and it gives me all that cost of doing business, but I'm getting a good return on it. So that's why I say, is it because the cost is there or because I don't understand where I'm getting a return on that investment? Now, you should understand every dollar you spend. As an investor, we want a return on. Same with design. It's like, hey, listen, we do certain design not to make these houses look pretty, right? We do certain design so that we get a return on it. So the consumer says, hey, I like that property above and beyond everything else available to me. And so it's different, it's unique, it's personalized. I want it. And by the way, I'm willing to pay you more for it. So those costs that you're referencing and those things that you're talking about are what gives us the competitive advantage, that gives us an unfair advantage in these marketplaces to go say, hey, listen, so here's all these costs. You're right, it's capital intensive on the front end. It's a pain. It feels like at the first, I'm only spending money, but I'm doing it so that I start to get a return on that for the long term, right? And so if my return on that investment is significant and it makes sense, I'm okay with the cost. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't, but that's where, when I look at a cost, I don't want a cost just to have a cost. I don't want to spend money to spend money like anybody else doesn't, but I'm willing to, if I understand the return I'm going to get from that. Right. And so there are a lot of things that add up on the front end. The goal is to maximize these assets on the back end and maximize our return on all of those costs that we're putting into them.
Man, I'm going to pause for a second. This makes me think, and it's a genuine question. Do you think, or I would think, and so do you think that entrepreneurs or people that build businesses would understand this more? Like if like a restaurateur is thinking about buying a short-term rental, they understand this because they got to buy the restaurant, they got to put in new appliances, they got to decorate it, they got to put in new booths, they got to hire people. Like they understand it's just the cost of doing business, right?
Right.
Is that kind of what
I would 100% agree.
Okay. Yeah.
When we talk to entrepreneurs, business owners, or people that are operating in a business at a high level and understand the different elements of business, 100% they understand these concepts a lot better, right? Yeah. It's just these are all decisions you make throughout business. It's like, hey, what kind of return is this cost getting me? What is the value that I'm getting from spending this money?
All right, next one. Just having one property isn't enough, Sean. I'm going to have to get like 5 of these things. I'm going to have to have a handful of these things. So, I mean, just because I get one short-term rental really isn't going to do that much for me. It may help me on savings or my tax savings for 1 year, but it's really not going to like make my life so much better.
Okay.
Please watch this episode, dude.
Well, I'm smiling because what does so much better is different to everybody. Mm-hmm. My life, making my life better is so different to everybody, right? And so there are properties that we see in our group all the time that we get posts and you read the post and they're like, man, this changed my life. This changed the course of what we're doing.
Well, it's one property. So many times.
And one property does have the ability, I would argue, to change the course of what somebody is doing. Many times they may not retire on one property, but it makes a massive difference in their overall plan, in their, what they're trying to build, their being able to use it right away. Like many times they're, hey, listen, I'm just looking to supplement a lifestyle asset because that's what we need in our lives right now. Many times it's like, hey, listen, I need to start that investment journey and I need to start building. And it starts with property number one, right? This happens to be an asset class that you don't have to have a lot of assets. You don't have to have a lot of properties. A handful of properties can make a big dent. And because a handful of properties can make a big dent, that means one property can make a pretty big dent, right? There's a lot of long-term rentals. A good long-term rental makes $500, if you make a couple hundred dollars per door on a positive cash flow per door, you're like, hey, that's a good long-term rental. Somebody else is paying for it. It's appreciating. You're making a little bit of money, but you have to have a lot more doors because you're making a couple hundred bucks a door, right? Short-term rentals have the ability in many cases to make significantly more than that. I mean, we just left Dan and Claudia's properties. Yeah. Those properties are averaging $250,000 positive cash flow per year. positive, you know? So that's 20 grand a month. In many circles, that one property is enough to retire on.
Wow. Right? Yeah, that's true.
And so I would disagree that one property can't move the needle, mm-hmm. and that it depends on what the needle is, right? Mm-hmm. Like what are we trying to build? And there will be, you could argue both sides of it. Depending on what the property goals are, you might mm-hmm. say, yeah, this asset might not be where, like, what's going to help me move the needle in this case. Mm. And there are times where you're like, man, this could really change the course of what I'm trying to do.
Mm. Okay, I kind of want to hit on, like, the speed that you could acquire the other ones. I mean, we just released another episode.
Yeah.
Go listen to how to scale on the timeline for that thing. But you can also, if you're thinking that one isn't enough, you can get your accelerate.
Handful. We talked about that. I mean, especially if you're getting the tax advantages, yeah. just parlay it to the next. Mm. And all of a sudden, you can scale that portfolio, mm. you know, without having to come up with the full down right. payment and the full amount of money every single time in rinse and repeat. You're able to shave that down mm-hmm. as every single time you acquire a property, you're able to shave that down, especially if you're able to accelerate your depreciation and use those tax savings going into the next property.
Mm. Okay. I believe that's two episodes ago. So just scroll down and click on it. Here we go. This is my last point here. Now, Sean, this is going to be kind of an odd one, but let's go into it. There's so many different coaches. Right, Sean, I'm on Instagram and I'm window shopping, and some people say, man, you can do this in 90 days. You can do this in 60 days. This is super easy. I made millions. But so then I hear you and you're saying it may not work for you. You're kind of agreeing with some of my points. Why? I mean, what makes you different? Why should we listen to you, Sean?
I don't know. So here's what I'll say.
Okay.
There's so much information out there right now. Mm-hmm. There's so many different choices and blueprints and this and that and the other. And there's fewer, as much information as there's also only, in my opinion, a handful of people that actually have been doing this for a long time. Mm-hmm. And the middle is messy. You don't pay for 6 years ago, when we started this, mm-hmm. you're paying for a blueprint. You're paying for a process. Those things are out there. You don't need information, right? The information is important. You need to know what to do, when to do it, how to do it. But the decisions you're going to make in the middle, the execution you need to know how to do in the middle, mm-hmm. because that's where things get messy and that's where things are different. And every property is unique and every situation has these little nuances. Without the experience, And I say experience collectively as well as mm-hmm. personally. Mm-hmm. You have to remember, I've been doing this for 20 years now. I bought my first short-term rental in 2006. So to say that I've been around this asset class and understanding the amount of deals that we've seen and the amount of things that we've done and decisions that have to be made in the middle is why you hire anybody to help you with anything anymore. And so why do I think I'm the best? Because I think I have more experience than anybody else. I think I've looked at more deals than anybody out there. And I don't, you know, maybe that's cocky. Maybe it's not, whatever. I believe that we have seen so much and we have such a collective knowledge base of experience and deals and case studies of what works and what doesn't work. And our goal is to help people double down on the things that work, avoid the things that don't. And in the middle, when they're making those decisions, mm-hmm. help them to say, here's why we make this decision. Here's what we would look at. Mm-hmm. Just like when I'm asking you on certain things, what are we judging against? What's our goals? Why are we trying to do this? And that's why there's always a big, it depends when you talk to me, when I'm asking mm-hmm. those questions, because there's not a one size fits all. I don't believe in these absolute statements that are made all the time of short-term rentals are dead because of this, or right. the markets are so saturated, you can't make money. Really? Right. I can show you almost every single saturated market in the country, and I will show you properties that make money mm-hmm. That I personally know mm-hmm. that we have in our Vodacy family. Mm-hmm. And so the fact is, when I say when people hire us, it's not because we have a secret blueprint that nobody can find or information that is not available to you online. Mm-hmm. It's, hey, listen, we've done this for a long time. We know what's going to happen when you do certain things. We know mm-hmm. the levers you need to pull. We know what you need to double down on. We mm-hmm. know what you should avoid. We know whether you should be getting in this game or not, mm-hmm. right? There's very many people that we look at and say, it's probably not the right fit for your personal situation. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't have enough capital. Maybe you don't have enough time. But we're going to at least be honest about it and have a conversation about it. So I believe the reason we have so much success and why I think we're the best mm-hmm. is because of our collective experience and knowledge is just it's just we've been doing it so long. We've made so many mistakes. Mm. We know what works and what doesn't work.
Right.
And we're constantly doing it. We're constantly trying to raise the bar. And so it's just a matter of saying, hey, listen, do I want to and you should judge me that way as well as everybody else. Like, look under the hood, talk to people that are doing it, figure out if this is going to be the right fit for you. If it is, double down and move forward and don't like I always said, like people always say, you know, what would you wish you would have done different on my Experts Corner interviews?
Start sooner.
That's number one. Start sooner. Second, trust the process. Yeah. They always say, just trust the process. Don't reinvent it.
Yeah.
I joined here thinking that I was, I was, you know, the master of my own universe. And I came in here doing really well. And I came in here and realized, holy crap, do not question this. This is here, right?
Yeah. I'm thinking of Anthony Guerra's quote. I remember at the end of one of his episodes, he said something like, you pay people to do a job, so shut up and trust them and let them do their jobs. Right. And I'm like, wow, that's a really good point.
It's true. It's true. It's like, hey, listen, but do some due diligence on the front end, right?
Yeah.
And ask those questions and have the debates that we're having.
Yeah.
Like talk to somebody and see how they would answer it, see how they would feel about it and see where they're at with certain things. And I think that's super important to be able to do because information is out there where the information is readily available.
Mm-hmm.
The decisions you need to make in your personal situation right in the middle of the game, that's what you pay for, is have somebody looking over your shoulder, making sure those T's are crossed, I's are dotted, and give you that advice based on their experience, not based on theory, not based on something they heard about, based on what they've actually done and seen and experienced.
Mm. I said it before, and I still think it's a big one, that the way we deter people, I think, is huge. You know, so we just go, this may not be for you. I don't think it's the right way, because I hear all the time that this is so easy. You can do it so fast. You'll make so much money. Anyone can do it. Yeah. Where it's like, I don't know.
Those types of absolute statements are so false. First of all, they can be like, everything can be true, right? Has somebody done amazing and made money really fast and everything else? Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Is that what you should sell? No, in my opinion, probably not. You need to sell the possibilities, sell the realities of the asset class. I think they're amazing. There's a reason it's the only asset I own, right? Because we just keep doubling down on it. And ultimately, it ends up being, where we become very intimately, we have a lot of intimate knowledge of what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But you need to find if somebody else that you're talking to has that same type of knowledge, experience, everything else. And you got to feel, hey, listen, is this the right fit for me? But to your point, a lot of times we're trying to poke holes in why somebody shouldn't do it so that they know all of the pros, all the cons as they're making those decisions.
Yeah. That's everything. That's all I have. That's all my points, man.
Okay.
We nice little debate there.
Good
I think
debate.
You, I think you
Good
tore
job.
Down, I would say, Good pretty job. Much all of them there. But
Good job.
Hey, that's some of the main objectives.
Hey, there's pros and cons to all of them, right? And I think that's a great conversation to have, and it's good questions for somebody else to ask somebody, that they might be considering, jumping in with and getting some advice from. And even if it's not short-term rentals, on another asset class, ask the same questions. Hey, does this affect it? And see how they answer it, and if you like their answers.
There you go.
Maybe people didn't like my answer.
There you go. Just a little bit of wisdom there. That's all it is.
That's it. All right. Okay, guys. Well, we'll wrap up for the day. We always appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's valuable, and it means a lot that you spend it with us. We hope you are walking into this game with your eyes wide open. That is our ultimate goal. If you know somebody else would like to be a part of these conversations, share the show, like it, or review it on whatever platform you're watching on. All three of those things are very much appreciated. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.